Varela. Good to have you.
Thank you. Good morning. Isn't Christmas wonderful? This is my favorite time of the year. Like outside, it looks and feels a little bit like spring, but inside, we have decorations and twinkling lights and candles, and you know, kids are starting to get excited, and it's a fun time. And then, as we heard this morning, it can also be a very difficult time, a time that is full of pain and loss and grief. And how do we hold these at the same time? How can it be true that a time can be both wonderful and difficult? Well, this is a paradox, and I feel like Christmas really highlights this idea of paradox, where we have two things. So a paradox is something that at first glance doesn't seem to make sense, but it does. And that's a little bit like Christmas and a little bit like life, where we have joy and we have pain. And that is just the human experience. So we're going to watch. We're going to start out watching this video with Kathy Escobar. It's going to be about 10 minutes, and then I'll come back and we'll kind of talk about it a little bit. But she captures it really well. So let's have a watch. Are we good, Mo? Awesome.
I have been thinking and pondering and writing about paradox for many years now, and really just where contradicting things can live in the same space at the same time. And I really love what Father Richard Rohr says about when we can embrace the paradoxes in ourselves, then we can embrace the paradoxes in other people as well. And I would just add, with God as well. There's something about honoring that hard contradictory things can live in the same space at the same time. So in the middle of the deepest grief and loss that I'm experiencing in my family, I can also be celebrating really good things that are happening in my life, in my kids' life, by just owning that I don't have to have one or the other, that they can both be in the same day, in the same breath, in the same moment, and that they're usually right next to each other. It makes me think of a story of a dear friend who died of cancer earlier this year. And it was a long, hard road. She was a fighter. And her dying in the middle of our grief, it just was just a storm of pain. But I needed to do her memorial service, and I wanted to do her memorial service. And I'll always remember it because it was February in Colorado. And it was like an 80-degree day, the day before her memorial service. And the day of her memorial service, it was like 19 degrees and a blizzard. And she had such a hard life. And I was like, why couldn't it have not been a sunny day? But the truth was, those 2 days next to each other really was the story. And so in the middle of so much of her hard and her life, there was also good. In the middle of so much in my life, there's also good. In the middle of everybody's life, my friends who live outside, my friends who are healing from deep, deep trauma, my friends who can't pay the bills, my friends who are in really, really rough circumstances on every way, shape, or form, there still can be joy. There still can be connection. There still is. Our friends who bring us things at the refuge to come get food, bring food to give to somebody else and then take what they need. To me, that's paradox. Like, it, all the hard and all the good is together. And the Jesus story is like that over and over again. I mean, it's just got it all in it at the same time. It's not either or, it's both and. And I frankly get tired of practicing paradox. It's tiring. For me, the danger is in making anything binary. I mean, it's easier. It is easier, but it's not healthier. And it's not the true story. The fullness of the story are contradicting things in the space, same space at the same time. And that part of the problem is we have been taught to squeeze one out and do anything we can to make it only the good or lean fully into the worst and not be able to see any light in the middle, the absence of light, the middle of darkness, to not see anything good. And it's hard. It's a strain. I'm not saying it's easy. None of this is a formula. You don't just go, oh, okay, so now I can do this. You know, it really is learning to do what we can to own all of it instead of to try and only have the pieces that feel a certain way or that the world tells us is good. And I really do think that even though practicing paradox can be tiring sometimes, it's also really freeing. And it's really freeing because we don't try and have to work to get rid of the hard. And we don't have to feel bad about the good. And that's tricky. In fact, I know this a lot in a lot of stories of friends. Like sometimes you feel bad for feeling good. And especially right now in the world, you know, it's like, I'm not allowed to feel good. The world's falling apart. It's really hard. You know, we're talking about huge systemic change in the right direction in so many ways, because a lot of our unhealthy systems are being dismantled and they need to be. But then people feel bad for feeling good and not doing enough and, you know, having any joy when there's so much struggle and strife in the world. And I just think this is, you know, kind of goes back to the more honest we can be, that we just can live with all of it together, the better we do. But it's definitely not science. It's definitely not science. It's an art, and it takes practice. I mean, I feel it all the time. I think that why kind of honoring reality and practicing honesty and then embracing paradox go together is because one of the ways that we can embrace paradox is by just being more honest and kind of letting things be instead of resisting them. And so to me, that's a huge part of the practice, is just kind of taking in the parts and not having it all figured out and making sense. I'm not saying paradox is pretty. And so it kind of makes me think a little bit of like a mosaic. You know, there's all broken, there's all these broken pieces, and it doesn't even make sense until, you know, some of it starts to come in a little bit. And sometimes you can't even see the design, but there's something, you know, the whole mess somehow from another perspective looks different. But always there's danger in trying to make something look good. I think embracing paradox helps us survive. So it helps us keep making it. I think it helps us thrive too. I think it helps us thrive because I think it breaks down the need to have it look a certain way or to conform to a certain unrealistic expectation that either we placed on ourselves or systems placed on us. And sometimes in the name of God, I think on the whole, it just releases that and it frees us. It just frees it up to be that it can be in the same space at the same time. So we can be in the deepest grief and have gratitude at the same time. But it's also not, they don't have to be equal. It doesn't have to be, okay, for this much grief, then I have to have this much gratitude. See, there we go again. Every single time, you know, we want it to all be neat and tidy. I think embracing paradox just helps us be. It helps us be. And it helps us just kind of own that we're human. Humans are paradoxical. I am, other people are, and certainly our faith is. And so that's been a really freeing thing for me, is just to kind of see God as paradox too. You know, there's a lot that I don't know. I don't have to know. And there's a lot of contradictions in the world of faith. And I think just kind of owning that and embracing that is freeing. Anytime you can, you know, kind of see the contradictions all in the same space. You know, I think of like when you're outside and you're in beauty and nature, but you're freezing cold at the same time. You know, I think that there's a million ways of just noticing. And I think that it's okay to put periods at the end of pain. We don't have to say, oh, it's so hard, but da 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 da. I think it's okay to say it's so hard, period. And then in the next breath, it might be, it's so whatever. You know, we don't have to every single time it is something's hard, we always add a good. I think that is a dangerous practice to feel. Like every time I've got to outweigh it with something else. I don't think that that's embracing paradox. I think it's just taking each thing of what it is and letting the whole picture be okay for whatever those things are. Because I always want to be careful. People don't have to go, I have to find light in the darkness. I have to find good in the bad. I have to find, you know, some silver lining in the cloud. That is never what I am saying. I always just think like, let this part be, and then let that part be, and let that part be, and that part be, and be all together in whatever way it's supposed to be.
Wasn't that great? I know it was a little bit long, and I tried to shorten it, but there were just so many good things in there, I thought we just have to go for it. So I think that we struggle. As humans, we struggle with paradox because paradox is not comfortable. It brings tension. And we don't like tension because tension makes us uncomfortable and we don't know what to do with it. So let's just take a few minutes and look at the life of Jesus. You know, she said that Jesus's life was full of paradox. And that is so true. Let's start with his birth. So when we see it depicted in little kids' coloring books or on Christmas cards or whatever, you might see, like, you know, pregnant Mary sitting kind of peacefully on a donkey as they're walking into Bethlehem. Okay, so for any woman that's had a baby, how many of you would like to have been riding a donkey while in labor? Like, I don't think so. I had 10 minutes in the car to the hospital with Shayna, and I thought, like, I'm going to lose my mind because you can't move and you got contractions. And for those of you that have not had children, we're just going to have a little educational session here. It is not like the movies where people are like, no, 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 going about their day, and then they go, oh, the baby's coming. Oh, oh. That's not it. That is not it. When I think back, so I always say that, you know, my labor with Karina was 2 hours and 45 minutes. I know some of you are like, girl, that was not even labor. I know that. I know that. But when I think back, I was actually having contractions for about 2 weeks. So they weren't all painful, but, you know, like contraction for 2 weeks. So for those of you that have not had children or will not have children, imagine this. So you're lying on the floor and you're doing sit-ups, you know, or a crunch, like every 5 minutes. And you're like, yeah, no worries. For 2 weeks. Like, you're going to get tired. Your body gets tired. So Mary and Joseph are traveling. So she's walking. Like, I don't know how long it took for them to travel, But she's riding on this donkey. And so it starts with, I don't know, everyone's different. Everyone's different. But, you know, you got some, like, little discomfort, maybe in your back, you know. And then it just progresses, right? It just, it kind of keeps going until it's really intense. So they're riding in, and, you know, Joseph looks really kind of serene in those Christmas cards and those pictures, right? Let's ask Wes. Let's ask Wes what it would have been like if Autumn was in labor and he had to lead his donkey into Bethlehem and find a place. Like when I was in the car on the way to the hospital, I knew where I was going. I knew there were going to be people there. Mary and Joseph, they don't know. And they're knocking on doors and they're like, let us in. And no, sorry, we're full. And come on, what is with those people? You've got a woman in labor and nobody could make room for her. Anyway, different part of the story. So they eventually find, you know, this stinky stable. And, you know, she has her baby. And we sang Silent Night. It was not a silent night. Right? Let's just imagine. I have heard stories of good, upstanding Christian women swearing a blue streak when they're in labor, saying all sorts of things, right? Because your body is like in a survival kind of trauma moment. It's like, I gotta do this, gotta get this out. And if Mary had been at home, she would have had her mom, her sisters, her aunts. She would have had a midwife. It would have been like a moment, right? And honestly, it's one of the most holy times in the Christian faith. I don't know what Mary was feeling at that moment. I mean, she knew she was giving birth to the Son of God. And sometimes I think maybe we want to sanitize things a little bit and pretend like, well, if she was giving birth to the Son of God, surely God would have been merciful and it would have been easy. And I'm not so sure. And I think of the psalmists, right? There's so much of this tension in the Psalms. Psalm 73, 21 to 28. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Yet I'm always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. So this makes me think God is sovereign. He can do things however he wants. And if he wants to do it in an instant, he will. And we do all hear the stories of things where God has just like instantly changed things. And then there are times that we hear that people, you know, they struggle, they contend with, they got to work and walk things out. And I kind of think that maybe that was Mary and Joseph's experience here, you know, that God was holding their right hand. He was giving them counsel, yet they had to walk through this really hard thing. So this paradox of the most holy night, the most amazing thing that's going to happen in the history of the world up until that point. And yet it's messy. It's messy and full of tension and full of anxiety. Moving on with Jesus's life. Do you ever wonder about the story of Lazarus? Because this one kind of popped into my head. So Jesus is away with his disciples and he gets this message that his good friend Lazarus is really sick and on the brink of dying. And his disciples are like, hey, like he's sick. We got to go. And he's like, no, we're going to stay for two more days. And in that conversation, you know, they're like, what's going on? Is he sleeping? And Jesus is like, nah, don't worry. I got this. He's going to die, but I'm going to raise him up again. So he knew what he was going to do before he went. And so then they get there and Mary and Martha, I really love reading the scriptures because they're like, you know, the scriptures are like, oh Lord, why did you not come? And I'm like, no, they were friends of Jesus. They probably would have been like, Jesus, like I just imagine them in their grief, right? Running up to him and pounding his chest and going, why weren't you here? You could have saved him. And Jesus, I realized as I was teaching last week and this week, I have a picture in my head of Jesus and I got to get rid of this. I'm 50 years old. It's time to change the narrative. But where, like, Jesus is kind of this very stoic man moving through the world. Oh, never fear, Mary and Martha, I have got this, you know? And everything he says is profound and meant to teach. And I actually think that if that was really Jesus, I don't really want to know him. Because I get tired of people just kind of telling me what to do all the time. And I think, you know, if he was so attractive, it must have been because he was authentic, because he was real. And if you've met someone who's real and authentic, you know, because you walk away going, oh, they saw me. They know me. And I think that's what Jesus was like. And then this weird thing happens. He knows he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. And then he goes to the tomb, and we have that very descriptive verse, shortest verse in the Bible, John 11:35, that says, Jesus wept. Well, it's a bit curious, isn't it? He knew what he was going to do, and he wept. And I think I've heard in the past, oh, you know, he was weeping to kind of show empathy for Mary and Martha. And if that's true, that seems a bit manipulative. And so I don't think that's true. I think it was the paradox. It was the man part of Jesus that stood, like Scott said last week, you know, like in the doorway where there's that metal strip. It's that in between. Lazarus was alive and Lazarus was dead. Lazarus is going to be alive. But right in this moment, the human part of Jesus felt that. The loss of his friend, the grief of Mary and Martha. He had that moment. And then, you know, steps into the tomb. He's like, Lazarus, come on out. Sure enough, Lazarus does. Gotta wonder what that was like, right? He's all wrapped in sheets. Imagine being Lazarus. You'd be like, what the heck is on my face? Anyway, I have a very vivid imagination. So Lazarus comes out and he lives 30 more years. Like, amazing, right? But there's that moment where we see that kind of back and forth between the paradox of Jesus, fully man, fully God. How about the Garden of Gethsemane? Jesus, or even one step back, having dinner, having the Passover feast, right? Again, you got to wonder, because he says to Judas, ah, you are going to betray me. And I wonder, didn't anyone else hear that? Didn't anyone else go, what is he talking about? And then, you know, Judas gets up and runs away. And again, I'm like, isn't everyone going, hey, like, what's up with Judas? Where is he going? We don't get all those details, but in my brain, I'm always going through them. And then, the Garden of Gethsemane, again, where Jesus is like, oh, if you can take this cup from me, right? The human Jesus. If you can take this from me, please do. But if this is the way it needs to be, then let your will be done. So, you know, there's that holy divine part saying, this is what I've got to do. And then the ultimate paradox, his death, where he died so we could live. All of these things, right? Tension. There's all these different pieces. And like Kathy was saying, we have to embrace that paradox in our own life, where we have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, because a lot of times that's what life is. Not always. There's joy. Oh, there's joy. New babies, right? Weddings and love and squirrels and puppies, you know, all kinds of things that are absolutely lovely. But there's also the pain, and there's also the difficult things. And one thing about Jesus is that I really believe he was authentic. He was here to love and to teach and to show us the way in a way that was fully human and fully authentic. And so he gives us permission. He gives us permission to acknowledge the difficulty. He gives us permission to feel those feelings. It's not bad to feel our feelings. We are created with emotion. We are created to feel grief and sadness and all of that, and it's okay. It's what we do with those emotions. You know, that becomes important. What is one of the biggest criticisms of Christians? Anyone want to take? Bingo. Hypocrisy, or they're not authentic. Everything's so great on Sunday, but you know, during the week, they're out doing whatever that doesn't line up with what we espouse on Sunday. That's why it gets very dangerous to get into this binary, right? Where we're either good or bad or happy or sad, because the truth is there's that constant tension in all of us all the time. This is the human experience, and Jesus felt it too. When we can embrace that paradox in our own life, we can embrace it in other people's lives, and that allows us to be gracious. So, yep, you messed up. I've messed up. It's all good. We are, you know, moving on, working through it. We're gonna do this. It helps us lean more easily into what God has for each of us in life. Because even when there is a plan for our lives, well, and I think most of us believe that there is, this, you know, God has laid something out for us. It's not easy. It doesn't, we've said this before, just because we're Christians doesn't mean our life is going to get, ooh, all butterflies and rainbows all of a sudden. No, there's still work that needs to happen. And I think if life was a marathon, most of us would like God to be the Uber, right? We're just going to get in the Uber. God's going to drive us to the finish line, and it's all good. I don't know, like that recently happened in an ultra marathon. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the articles. There was a Scottish runner who broke a record. Man, she was amazing till they realized she'd taken an Uber. Like, yeah. So Scott's shaking his head like, oh, we all train and run this, and she took an Uber, right? So most of us would like God to be the Uber in our lives. But I think he's more a little bit like someone called Mutter Dad. So Scott, you know Mutter Dad. That's Jeff. Jeff and Karina have run Tough Mutter five times. And we recently did a family 5K this summer. That's for me, because I'm not doing Tough Mudder. But Mudder Dad, he runs, and he does the obstacles, and then he comes back. How you doing? Good? Okay, you need to walk? We can walk, no problem. All right, let's do this thing. He's very energetic, and he's very encouraging, but he can't run for you, if it really required it, I'm sure he would let me ride on his back for a few steps, but essentially, he's the encourager. He's walking beside me. He's helping me out by being there, a little bit like what they talked about in the Psalms, holding my right hand and walking with me. And we can embrace paradox a little more if we understand that God's not the Uber. He's a little more like Mutter Dad. He's a little more like beside us, holding our hands. Yes, I've got you. We can do this. Let's do this together. I'm walking beside you if you need to. We're running when we need to. We got this. Sometimes it's a little more like that Footsteps in the Sand poem where he picks us up and carries us. That is all his, it's in his wisdom. It's in his sovereignty. But my experience is that most often it's a little more like Mutter Dad. And we could all be a little more like Mutter Dad for those around us. Because as we embrace our own paradox, as we live and experience deep pain, it allows us to sit with those who are experiencing deep pain. Because we're less uncomfortable, because we've been there. Or maybe we're still there, and we can walk it together. So as we move through this season, I do encourage us to just embrace the paradox. Just be there in the truth of whatever that truth is for you, so that we're not fighting against ourselves or fighting against our situation, because that takes up a lot of energy. But just being there, knowing that God is holding our right hand, that he's walking with us. And then we can allow others to sit in their paradox without asking them to put on a brave face so that we don't feel uncomfortable with their paradox. Embrace our own. Support everyone else's as we move through the season of peace and difficulty for some. Thank you.